The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
Cutting corners wisely. We want to think about some areas that we could do that in our schools, in our thinking, in our dealings with children. In that title, Cutting Corners Wisely, we realize that we can cut corners unwisely also. There's always a temptation to let something slide, to do it the easy way, to do it a way that seemeth right unto man. There's a verse in the Bible that talks about that. There's a way that seemeth right unto man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death. So as we think about cutting corners wisely, we want to be efficient. We want to do a good job in our classrooms, in our teaching endeavors. But we don't want to miss something. Sometimes when we're traveling somewhere and we look at the map and we say, or think we'll go this direction, we think that this will cut off a corner for us. And we get to the destination and someone says, well, did you see such and such along the way? No, I cut off the corner and I didn't see that. And that may not be important to us. But on the other hand, maybe we missed some important thing because we tried to take a shortcut. And sometimes in taking a shortcut, especially in travel, we run into detours, we run into bad roads, run into all sorts of problems because we didn't take the time or it wasn't available to us to educate ourselves about what was going to happen when we cut that corner. In John chapter 4, it talks about Jesus meeting the woman at the well in Samaria. And obviously Jesus wanted to reach out to that lady. And he started with a question. I think he cut a corner in starting the conversation because of the way he started it. It was such a thing that it brought him into a conversation with this lady in such a way that the conversation really opened up for them. But as the story went on there in John chapter 4, they're talking about water. And he says to the lady, he says, I can give you water where you'll never thirst again. Now, he was doing this to bring out a spiritual point. But she seeing that there was a corner that could be cut, she said, oh, give me that water so I don't have to come to this well anymore. I don't want to do this. I'd like to cut this corner. And Jesus explained himself to her then. And I think that in the end, she realized that he was cutting another. He was providing a new path for her to travel on. Completely new. Not just cutting a corner, but providing a new path. And she was so delighted to have her sins forgiven, to have a relationship with God. Cutting corners wisely. As I thought about this subject, I thought, who created the corner that needs cutting? And I think it's important that we consider that, because that helps me to decide how much I can do about fixing it. One thing that I've learned as a minister and working with people is that I cannot fix people. I remember times where someone came to me, a wife perhaps, that said, fix my husband. He's not doing what he should. Fix him. And I realized I can't. I can't fix that person. I can talk to that person. I can show them the truth of God's word. I can try to reason with them, but in the end, they must make a choice. They must make a decision that is theirs. God has made us that way, that we are creatures of choice. So as I think about corners that need cutting, I need to work with them to the best of my ability, but the one that we'll probably spend the most time on is the one about me. Not just me, but each of you, you can think of it as the me corner. The corner that I create, that's the easiest corner for me to cut because I can do something about that with God's help. And with God's ability, God's grace working in our hearts and lives, hopefully we can do things that save us time. All of us, I think, are time conscious. When we travel somewhere, we try to leave enough time to get there on time. And we have delays happen. We may try to get there a little quicker, some way, got some corner. And as teachers, as educators, as parents, it seems like we never have enough time. Especially in the classroom, I found that there was always something to do and always something that I had to maybe leave undone, because I'm trying to decide what's the greatest priority here. So if we can cut some corners in some places, maybe it'll give us a little more time to do some other things. Hopefully we're getting the important things done in our classrooms. I hope that's happening already. But if we can cut some more corners and get things trimmed down, maybe there'll be more time for extra things. I've always felt that in my classrooms, that if these children will just get done with all their work a little bit early. I had some lists of things that I would be glad to do with them. Little science projects, you know, maybe a nature hike or something that we could do right at the end of school, even around the school property or something. Something extracurricular. And they would have enjoyed that. But I needed to help them get motivated and get their work done. Okay, who created the corner that needs cutting? The child. The child may be creating corners that need cutting. The first thing I have there is undisciplined. And I know we've all been around children at one time or another. We've been around children who are undisciplined. And the chaos that provides for a situation. Other children that are disciplined can't learn properly either when you have that kind of a situation. And the child is undisciplined and he's not getting any learning done. Those around him are struggling to learn. And we as a teacher do have the opportunity to work with that situation. There's some ways to work there would be to provide the discipline that's needed. Perhaps the child continues to misbehave. There would be also the use of the school board. I prefer to bring the parents in before that, but you also use the school board to work with the situation. Occasionally, and we've had a situation not too long ago, where a child was so undisciplined that we did have to expel them from school. We had to tell the parents, this child can no longer come to our school until he gets some sort of one-on-one help of some sort. And the boy did go to a camp where he is getting help. It is changing his life at this point. It seems to be working and changing. But he was so undisciplined, he would do things that were actually harmful to other children. They never knew when they were going to get knocked out flat on the gym floor or whatever. So that undisciplined corner is a tough one. No direction or goals. A child may not know really what he's up to or doing. And to me, I think that's a reflection on us as teachers, if that's true. They need direction or goals. Some children need a lot more of that than others. Some children are naturally able to see what needs to be done. They're interested in school. They're interested in what's going on. They pay attention. And you tell them the directions once and they do it. Isn't that nice? But then there's those others that, well, you've already explained the directions twice. And they say, now what do you do here? No motivation. Some children do not have natural motivation. Some children seem to be naturally motivated. I had several children like that. I remember a girl that would have been in about the fifth or sixth grade when this happened. And she was so motivated. She pleaded with me. We would have had an individualized system where they could work at their own pace. And she pleaded with me that she would be able to work in only one book at a time. And I said, no, you have to work in all your books. You have to do some work in all your books every day. She was capable, and I didn't want to get something started that I didn't know how to handle. She said, can I just do one page in some of the books? I said, yeah, no, I'll let that go. She would do 40 to 50 pages in one book and one page in all the other books, day after day, all year long. I mean, it wasn't just a passing fancy. She got, I don't know, 85, 90 books done that year, I think, or something. She did good work. She had no other focus. I mean, she didn't enjoy sports. She didn't. The one thing that troubles me about it is that she was a bit reclusive from the other children. The other children would try to involve her, but she didn't enjoy doing things a lot of the other girls did. But that's an exception to the rule. Most of the children would rather stare out the window, you know, like today. It's nice and sunshiny out there. There's no motivation. And we as teachers can help that. We can work with that. If you have a classroom that's motivated, oh my, you've got all sorts of corners cut there. Things can happen. Things can get done. I worked with my largest first grade class would have been 9 students, and that whole class was motivated. That was a joy to teach. They just worked so well together and got their work done, and we could do extra things. And there were some things that I did to help motivate there. I was, as I may have mentioned in one of the previous sessions, I like to read. I like to have story time. I would go to the library, and once the librarians knew that I was a teacher, I was allowed to get as many books as I wanted at a time. I would come home with 25 to 30, maybe even more books, whatever I could carry comfortably out of the library in one trip. And I would read them every day for story time, 3, 4, 5. And then they went back on a shelf, and the children then could read them to themselves or look at them if they were unable to read yet. But that was the motivation. When you get your work done, you can go back to the book corner. And I found, okay, there's another thing, is you be enthusiastic about something and you'll help your students to be enthusiastic. I like to read, so I put a lot of expression into the reading. I really tried to make the reading interesting, and the children can't hardly wait to get hold of the book and look at the pictures and wonder about what the teacher read. Chaotic home life. And there's not much we can do about that. But it should help us to be sympathetic with what's happening there. And sometimes it can help us to cut a corner there if we realize that there's things happening at home that are keeping this child from their full potential at school. So we want to pray for that child. We want to work with that situation. We want to be sympathetic to it. We want to maybe don't expect as much out of that child in the class in which, you know, you're trying to get a lot done and you realize that child is not performing well and things may have happened at home. Okay, go on to parents. Parents can create corners that may need cutting. Maybe the parent doesn't see to the homework. And we've had that problem before where parents said, school is for school, home is for home. Don't bother us with homework. If they've got some extra time, they can work on their homework, but otherwise, if we've got plans for the evening, don't expect us to make sure our children get our homework done. I've had parents like that. That's hard to work with. That's hard to identify how to get around that. Again, there, use your school board, use whatever helps you can. Talk to the parents. There's no use in trying to twist their arm too hard, but try to get them to see things a little bit from your point of view there. Doesn't help the child get enough rest, and I really encourage those of you that are parents, especially with young children, make sure that the Sunday night visiting doesn't get so late that on Monday they can't stay awake. Monday morning seemed like the worst for me when I was teaching. Children came to school, and all of a sudden I'd see a head down on a desk, and the child was sleeping. And you'd ask a little bit, oh, we were over at Uncle So-and-so's till 11:30 last night. And the child just didn't have enough rest. Number three, maybe the parent doesn't care. And I hope that's not the situation for any of you. And I don't know how to tell you to cut that corner except to pray. God can work in that situation better than we can. Only God can change the heart of a parent to care about education. I'm glad for the people that are here today that care about educating children, your children, other people's children. You care about that. You want to do a good job. You want to do your best with it. I'm glad you're here. You care. And if we care, we'll care enough to pray about that situation. What about the school board? I don't know if there's a lot of school board members here today, but be aware of problems at school. Be involved. One thing that we've tried to do in our school to become more efficient, to work better, is to get the school board more involved. Encourage the school board to come to school somewhat regular basis. Again, I do that somewhat in going and reading stories. I was on the school board last year, and I intend to continue doing what I did last year, this year, once I get back from this trip, and that is to go and have story time with some of the children. It gives the teachers a break. It helps you to connect with the children. You can stay around a while afterwards and see what's happening in the classroom. And just check on things there at school. Sometimes the school board, well, it doesn't seem like there's any problems, so we kind of, hopefully nobody calls us and we go on. And there may be problems brewing at school and we don't know that. Expect too much of the teacher. Teachers, if you feel overloaded, talk to your school board about it. Let them know. They may say, yeah, I know, but this is the best we can do, and everybody has to make the best of a bad situation. But they may say, well, we'll get you some help, or that's not really your responsibility. Somebody else is going to take care of that. We found that true in our school. There was teachers doing things and ordering things and taking care of maybe like cleaning supplies and all. Really wasn't their job. They were better off to be working with the students and grading tests than to making sure that the textile company was going to show up and bring enough towels for the restrooms or something. Does not have clear guidelines of the teacher's responsibilities. School board may create a corner there. The teachers really don't know who's in charge of what at school if there's multiple teachers. Make sure that there's clear guidelines there and what their responsibilities are as teachers. Micromanages, I don't know that that's too much of a problem with school boards. I suppose there's some out there that do that, though, or could do that, where they would manage every little bit and want to know all the details and call me about any infraction that happens. I just don't think that's necessary. I think that becomes too much and bogs the process down. The teacher should have responsibility. The teacher should know what they're doing and be able to take care of things in their individual situations that come along. If it gets too big, get the school board involved, but they should be able to handle a lot of responsibility in their own classrooms, taking care of things there. Doesn't equip teachers and schools with the proper tools. School boards, make sure you're teachers have good tools to work with, good books. Do they have to stop and tape up the textbooks just to hold them together for another day, making sure that all the loose leaves are collected? Do they have to bring their own supplies from under the kitchen sink for the science demonstration? Do they have, I know we can go on and on about science equipment. It would take a very deep pocket to pay for all the science stuff that can be used. But some of the simple things, can we make sure that they're there? We had a little issue with that recently, and I hope it's being taken care of. One of the teachers talked to me, and she said, I would just like to do the one experiment where you can pour metal filings on a piece of paper, put a magnet underneath it, and it'll make all sorts of, or not all sorts, but it makes a certain design. I'd just like to be able to do that. And I said, Marla, I said, the filings are there. I used to do that all the time. Well, she said, find it for me. So I went and looked, and it wasn't there. Somebody had thrown it out or whatever. And there was enough filings in that can for years and years. But somebody looked at it and said, what are these filings for? And threw them out probably. So, school board, think about that. CLE. Can CLE create corners that need to be cutting? Certainly we have all our corners cut, don't we? We'd like to think so, but no. We heard the progress report. See the things that they're working on, the things that they're revising. Why are they revising? Because they think they can make them better. And for us as teachers, we always look forward to when the new edition comes out, and we hope it's better, works better. Check out the teacher's guides. Teachers, use the teacher's guides. And they are a lot better now, especially with the Sunrise Edition, and they keep coming out with more of them than they were back when I taught school. But use the teacher's guides. One of the things I do for CLE is I go to Ontario for part of 1 week, and I go to Harrisonburg, Virginia for parts of 2 other weeks, and I help with teacher training. Elmer's there, and he's doing the main teaching, but I work with first grade teachers while I'm there. And I'll have teachers, let me back up and say this again differently. Some of the teachers that come, or most of the teachers that come, are new. They're going to be teaching for the first time. Some of them that come have taught for several years, but they've never taken the training. Those are the ones that I find interesting sometimes, and they'll say, where do you find the spelling words for first grade? Because I really think you need to have a spelling test every day in first grade. I said, well, they're in the teacher's guide. They are? Where are they at? And I'll show them. And another teacher says, how do I know where I should be at in first grade with the books? Let's say on January the 15th, where should I be at? Oh, there's a chart in the front of the teacher's guide. It tells you that. It does. See, you know, we go to so much effort to find stuff when it's right there within our hands. Someone was talking to Elmer about the social studies and using the textbooks. And in that school, all they were doing was using the textbooks, the questions at the end. And this fellow was complaining because he said, I'm spending so much time writing out quizzes and tests and things like that. Elmer said, do you know that we have that in a little booklet? Oh, see? See how many minutes, hours, how much time he's spent on that when he could have been doing something else? And that's what CLE is trying to do, is to cut some corners for us there. And they're constantly, we need your input on that. Let us know if there's an area that you think that there could be a help some way or something. They'll consider it. Ask for updates on new and better curriculum. Again, that's what we heard on the progress report. Ask for lists of required work. Sometimes you'll have a student that just struggles in school, and you don't know how to keep things going in such a way that the whole class can, if it's a classroom setting or whatever. Well, there are lists that tell us about books that certain that children like that can cut out those books from doing. Let's know about them. Let's know our options. Maybe there's children that are bright and intelligent and don't have enough to do. Maybe get some of the elective work. They're getting more elective books in some of the younger grades. Like you do 5 books of Bible in the regular, but there's 5 more elective books if that child needs extra work. What about me? How can I create a corner? Certainly I wouldn't do that. I can come to class unprepared. I can come into the classroom and I'd be fumbling around, finding my teacher's guide, scanning over the lesson. All the while, I've already told them, first grade, get out your learning tree books, and they're sitting there patiently or impatiently waiting for something to happen. And what a waste of time. Let's think about what's going to happen ahead of time. Let's get prepared. Come to class prepared to teach. What can I do to prepare ahead of time? You can have a teacher planner. It gives you a schedule. I'm not very good with lists, but as I grow older, the more and more I see I need to get in that habit of making lists so that I don't miss things, so that I can prioritize and get the right thing done at the right time. Routine helps efficiency. I always did learning, you know, first grade, you're going to do learning to read first thing in the morning and then work math in. And then the other, if you're doing some other subjects and all, I would put them in later. And as we go up through the grades, though, I look at doing math and language arts as important things to get done in the morning, where the mind is the sharpest and work goes the best. And to me, it should be that way day after day after day. Don't, oh, okay, today we're going to start out with science and we'll do language arts in the afternoon, and the next day, today we're going to start with math and we're going to do social studies in the afternoon. No. The children are in constant confusion. If they have a routine and a schedule, hopefully we get them to, they're pulling out their books already. It's already coming out of the desk without us telling them to. Okay, student planner. Something for the older students to look at and tell what's going to happen next, what their goal is, what they want to get done in the next day, the next week, the next month. And know your material. Know what you're working with. Especially, I think of that in a classroom setting where you're doing lecturing and talking. You need to know your material. Know what the students are working with. One thing that helps is to teach more than 1 year, too. So, teach longer, becomes easier, hopefully. I can have too long a devotional or story hour time. And I found that to be true. I've noticed some teachers think they need to have a 35, 40-minute devotional. And I hope this doesn't sound sacrilegious to you, but I don't think that's necessary in our schools. We have a lot of Bible teaching throughout it. And it needs to be short and sweet. Once their eyes glaze over, they're not really listening anyway. We can have too long a devotional, even for older students. And I loved having a devotional time, but it needs to be short. And let's get to work on the day. Story hour. I hate to admit it, but I had too long story times sometimes. It was actually story hour, not just story time. It was, I love to read, but when I read too long, I'm taking away from doing their other lessons or other work. I can have needless discussions. That's something I really ran into when I was teaching grades 5, 6, and 7. That group there really enjoyed having a good discussion, and I did too. I would end up at somebody's desk that had their flag up, and they would ask a question, and from there I would begin a discussion, and before I looked around the room, and no one's working. And several people are involved in the discussion that have nothing to do with it. And we were having a good time. And sometimes we went ahead and continued them if I felt that it was a good teachable moment. But I think I had too many of those. So I need to think about that. Am I having a needless discussion, something that's going to take away from the school day and create a corner? That somehow later I'm going to have to try to figure out a way to get around this. I can be tired from lack of sleep. I'm going to talk a little bit to the single teachers. Be careful. We have all these weddings to go to. And we go to these weddings and we get home at 2:30, 3 o'clock on Monday morning. And then we drag ourselves to school and we make it through the day some way. And I've heard children come home and say, "Dad, the teacher was all grumpy today." And I knew what the schedule had been, and I knew why they were grumpy. And I started seeing a pattern. Teacher didn't get enough rest. Had a rotten day at school. Teachers, get your rest. There's something about committing yourself to a school board or to a school community and saying, "I will teach," that means that sometimes we have to cut some things out, or at least allow enough time, or maybe we have to get a substitute. Don't make the children suffer for your undisciplined life. Anyway, enough of that. I can allow personal problems to dominate my thinking. Oh, we might as well go back and pick on you guys again. If you're dating, watch out. My personal problems can make it such that all of a sudden I am not really focusing on the room anymore. And I'm not saying you can't date and be a school teacher. I'm not saying that. I had a son-in-law that did that with my daughter. And I thought he did okay, but I heard from some other parents that they weren't too impressed about a couple things. I'm sure they were just picking on him. Okay. But I can allow personal problems. Maybe something's happened in my life that is shattering, earth-shaking, maybe even something I'm excited about. And I can allow that personal problem to so dominate my thinking that all of a sudden I look up, the children are all sitting there waiting for me to say something, and my mind left the classroom for a little bit. How long, I'm not sure. I can overlook discipline problems in my students. Sometimes we're so busy, we're in the middle of having a class over here, and we look over and somebody is doing something wrong, and we say, I'm going to talk to you at break, and that's fine. But maybe we're so busy that suddenly, for some reason, then we all of a sudden think, I'm just going to let it slide. He won't do it again. Hopefully it goes away. I'm too busy to keep up with this. And I just got to stick with the teaching. And we overlook discipline problems, and the problem looms larger and larger, doesn't go away. And in the end, we have created a big corner, a big one. And it doesn't get cut until we get back in there, back to the beginning almost, and take care of it from there. I could be a poor example. And I'm thinking especially of the way that we score the students' work. Some of us do more of that than others. Probably most of us, I hope all of us, score the tests at least. And I'm thinking about tests, and I'm thinking about essays and reports. In my opinion, tests should be scored and the new book given back by tomorrow. If you can, and occasionally that works out if you're not real busy, it can be given back that day. Make sure you don't overshoot on your school board's policy, though, on that. I taught for the first 3 weeks this year in our high school. Our principal was unable to get back in time from his home community. His father had had an accident over the summer, and he was needed at home. And because I was a substitute, I feel like substitutes have more time because they're not in charge of things like programs and stuff like that. And I decided I wasn't going to let any flags suffer. They were going to get their flags answered right away. But I was going to try to score tests still. And I was able to do that. And most of the time, they got their book back the same day. Now, that doesn't always work. And as a regular teacher. But it should be scored that night. They should get their new book the next day. I've had some issues with some teachers that they've got three other books to work in or something like that. We'll just let this go for a while. I'm too busy to score it tonight. I'll get it the next day. What are you teaching the child? Is the child going to get their work done on time then when I want the homework done? Another one we had was, I've had some experience with this, where teachers would wait weeks to score a report or an essay. A child had, it was in a high school situation, a child had done the report. He had to go to the library, check books out, get information, do all the kinds of stuff you do for a big report like that. Had it done, handed it in, thought everything was fine. 2 weeks later, the teacher came back and said, I finally got around to looking at your report, and you're going to have to do it over. The child was devastated at that point. And I felt like there was a poor example being given by the teacher there too. How can I expect my students to get their work done on time when I don't do things in a timely manner? Places not to cut corners, first grade, of course. Don't cut corners there. When it comes to teaching children to read, don't cut a corner. Don't try to say, well, I think I can, you know, we didn't quite get over the lesson, so I'm going to skip this. Be careful with that. There may be some places for that if you've got really bright, intelligent children and they've done the same sort of thing several, in the past and they've done well at it. and maybe we can skip some things there, but be careful about skipping, and especially not in the main teaching things of the lesson. The first half of the year, you're teaching them to read. Do it well, even if it takes longer. And that thing in the front of the teacher's guide that tells you where you should be, don't follow that too religiously. Most of us struggle to keep up with that. Don't worry if it goes another week or two after that timeline. I think you can catch up better if you have them have a good foundation in reading to begin with. You may have to cut back on the amount of math you do or something else like that just to make sure that learning to read is taught properly. A good foundation in reading will help the other teachers cut corners. I've had teachers thank me for the children they taught after I'd taught first grade because they read and could read well and comprehend what they read. It's not hard to teach then, right? Caution. The easy way is not always the best way or even the fastest. Think of the wise man and the foolish man. Foolish man said, oh, here's a nice sandy spot. It's great. I'll just throw down a concrete floor here and start building a house. And we know what happened. But somebody else said, I need to dig deep. I need to get down to a really solid footing. I need to prepare for the time ahead. And instead of just looking at today, and too often that's what happens when we try to cut corners, is we just look at right now, the situation that is here right now, and we say, how can I cut the corner right now? And we don't look to the future and see what's going to happen because of that. Let's think about the ramifications of what we are doing. Some teachers seem to have it all together. Have you ever noticed that? You go visit another school, and the teacher is smiling. The children are obedient, and they're going to get done with their work early. Isn't that nice? And you're teaching, and you're frustrated, and at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, not even half the work is done, and the teacher's not smiling. And sometimes I think, as teachers, we try to copy other teachers too much. We come together like this to get ideas from each other, and that is so good, because we learn from each other, we learn from others' experience. But we need to take that and make it work with our own personal set of abilities. All of us are unique in our teaching. I don't think any one of you can teach like I can. And that's, I'm not trying to make that sound like I teach good. It's just, you do not teach the way I do. I don't teach the way John does. You teach unique to you. Use other people's ideas, but remember, God gave you a unique set of abilities and a unique set of limitations, and you had to work within that. When I taught first grade for one of our other teachers, I taught for 2 weeks about 2 or 3 years ago while she was in Bible school. I went to school, and she told me how she did things. But she said, Lennon, do it however you want to. She said, I know you've got more experience than me. Just do it however you want to. I felt nice about that, but thought I'm going to do it her way. And I tried. Oh, I tried. And one of the little girls in second grade wrote in the school newspaper, she said, when Sister Hosanna went to Bible school, Brother Hartman came and taught our class. The first day, he got all confused. She said, the second day, he went back to doing things the way he used to do. It was a lot better. And it was, for them, for me. It wasn't just that I was confused, but they felt insecure because the teacher hardly knows what he's doing, because he's trying to teach in a way that I'm not cut out to teach. So don't try to be somebody else. Try to be the person that God has created you to be. And do your best with your abilities, with your limitations. Decide what your goal as a teacher is and keep that as a priority. Keep focused. One of the goals that I had as a teacher was to make myself unnecessary to the student. And when they're little, you never get away from that. You just start to see them growing. When I taught 5, 6, and 7, though, I started to see children that were going farther away from needing the teacher's help all the time. Their flag wasn't up very much. And I found that to be rewarding. You know, you want to feel needed, but on the other hand, I like to see children that can work on their own, get things done on their own. So when a corner comes at you, think about, where did it come from? Who created this corner? Can I really do anything about it besides praying? And if you can, decide how it needs to be cut, how it needs to be worked with, and then cut it wisely. Think about the future. Think how it's going to affect things in the future, and cut it wisely. May the Lord bless.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.